A huge thanks to Melissa Rocha for coming back on the pod and sharing her love of the rules and regulations of the SEC with us and her wisdom from her time there. It was extremely valuable. Now, whether you just finished the full episode and want the quick recap, or you're just tuning in to the bottom line for the highlights, allow me to summarize what my key takeaways were. Number one, once the deal closes, the SEC filing window opens. If you do an acquisition that's significant, meaning it crosses that 20% threshold on either the investment, asset, or income tests, then the target's historical financial statements, which we call the 305s, must be filed on Form 8K with the SEC. The level of significance dictates how much work is ahead. If the target's over 20%, you need 1 year of financials. If it's over 40%, you need 2 years of financials. And you get 4 business days to file that initial 8K after the acquisition closes. And then there's another 71-day grace period to get those 305s on file. This can be a tight turnaround depending on the situation, which leads me to my second takeaway, the waiver process. This is a highly valuable resource, but you need to have a good strategy. I thought this was a huge insight for Melissa, especially because when she was at the SEC, she was the one granting some of these requests. And basically, if you do a significant acquisition, you can go to the SEC and ask them for a waiver to not file the 305s. And we see this a lot when it comes to carve-outs and other situations where the target doesn't have clean financials. However, simply arguing that it's going to be very difficult or very expensive to get those financials is simply a non-starter, no matter how persuasive you think the argument is. Instead, the key is to build a comprehensive case. You need to show why the rules are creating an anomalous result, prove that the required financial statements wouldn't actually be meaningful to an investor, and ideally propose an alternative to the staff. And my final takeaway, registration statements are the ultimate trapdoor for an acquirer. We actually talked about 3 trapdoors that registrations create for acquisitions. Number one, it could seriously accelerate the deadline to file those 305s, especially if the registration statement's filed or declared effective during that 71-day grace period that I mentioned. Second, it brings into scope probable acquisitions. So while an 8K only applies to consummated transactions, a registration statement may require 305s, even if the transaction hasn't closed yet. And then lastly, if you do a series of individually insignificant deals, but when you add them all up, they cross the significance threshold, then you're going to have to include at least some information about those in the registration statement. All of this leads to what's probably the biggest takeaway of all, which is that the accounting and finance teams simply have to be plugged into the M&A strategy from the beginning so you don't get caught scrambling at the end. I'm Nick Tricarci, and this has been The Bottom Line. If you want to dive deeper into these rules, I highly recommend checking out our SEC Considerations for Business Combinations handbook. You can find it on our FRV website. It's packed full of examples and Q&As and interpretations of what rules apply in what situations. And as always, please be sure to subscribe and leave us a review and reach out to us if there's topics you want us to tackle in the future. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you later.